Hello there. Welcome. You've arrived just in time for our annual holiday tradition, known as All Hallows Read. I'm glad to have you here to share in some spooky, strange, and otherwise surprising stories. There's nothing like a good local ghost legend, is there? That sense of feeling familiar, both in terms of, have I heard this before? And I know that place. Now, we've shared a number of local legends on the show over the years, some with roots in the real world, and some living in the nebulous realm of legendry, where we can't be sure just how true they really are, but we still love sharing them all the same. But what if a ghost story were more than just a tale of haunted houses or strange specters? In many cases, a local legend will tell of a ghost who doesn't simply linger on at the site of a tragedy or hitchhike their way back to their own grave, but instead serves as a sort of warning about things to come. That is where we pick up our theme for this year. It's a space where the mysterious and the magical overlap, where a spirit or creature or presence makes itself known because something far worse is coming. These are hints who verge on the prognosticatory, ones who sense a future that bodes ill and who appear to send up a brief warning to any who will pay attention. And so, without further ado, we begin our journey through the realm of fortune-telling phantoms in South Carolina with the tale of a spirit known as the Gray Man. The identity of the Gray Man, South Carolina's most widely known spirit, is a mystery. It is said that he makes his appearance on the coast of Pawleys Island as a warning to everyone nearby when a big storm approaches. His presence has inspired many businesses and products in his honor, including artwork, books, even a film. Sherman Carmichael from Johnsonville wrote a book called Legends and Lore of South Carolina, where two stories about the Gray Man are featured. Out of all the legends and lore in South Carolina, there are more about the Gray Man than anything else, says Sherman. Pick up any 10 books talking about South Carolina folklore, and chances are, you will find mention of him. The greatest thing about this ghostly figure is that he is benevolent. He surfaces before grave storms can be seen, and he's a friendly reminder for people to evacuate the area. But he also serves as an indication that no harm will come to those who spot him. Everyone that has come into contact with him, says Carmichael, says that he warns them to leave the island, that danger is approaching. That those that heed the warning of this helpful spirit and leave the island have returned after the hurricane to find their homes, find them undamaged. Homes on both sides, front and back, have been destroyed, but theirs are left standing. There are a few different iterations of this mysterious story, but they all lead back to roughly four main versions. Most accounts suggest the Gray Man made his first appearance around 1822 and was spotted as recently as 1989, just before Hurricane Hugo hit the island. So just who is the Gray Man? One popular opinion believes that he was a sailor who had been away from home for 2 years and was eager to reunite with his fiancée. Unfortunately, due to a powerful storm that made landfall near Charleston on September 27, 1822, he drove himself and his horse into a pool of quicksand and perished tragically. His heartbroken fiancée searched the shoreline for hours until she saw a figure wearing a gray cloak, whom she believed to be her beloved, only for him to suddenly vanish. That night she dreamt of him and wept hysterically and awoke overwhelmed with grief. Her father took her and her family inland, for a doctor visit, perhaps due to her emotional state. And the next day, a hurricane demolished everything in its path, except for her fiancé's family's house. Tales of the Gray Man have been around for decades, with some stories claiming he's the spirit of Percival Pauly, the island's founder, and some others claiming that it's the ghost of Edward Teach, better known as Blackbeard. Legends about him began to spread in the 1940s, especially after a book of ghost stories was published featuring him. As hurricane season approaches every year, there's a new wave of stories about the Gray Man. This became especially popular after a pair of locals were interviewed on Unsolved Mysteries following Hurricane Hugo. On an afternoon walk that day, the couple said that they'd seen the Gray Man. The man had even waved to greet him before the storm began. Houses around theirs were destroyed in the storm, but when they returned home, they found everything exactly as they'd left it. Another local woman said that when someone sees the Gray Man, their house is safe from destruction. She shared a story about one house where not only did it survive, but all the beach towels had remained undisturbed on the porch. Another local recalled his father saying that he'd encountered the Gray Man prior to Hurricane Hazel in 1954. He remembers his father was fishing on the south side of the island, and when he returned home, he reported seeing the ghost. Another Pauly's Island resident heard a tale from a friend about an evening beach walk with another couple where they saw the ghostly figure. Just after sunset, they spotted the Gray Man hovering nearby. A minister from the local area shared an encounter with the Gray Man, which happened on the beach on the eve of Hurricane Hugo. The afternoon grew wet and wild right before the evacuation order was issued. He noticed someone walking towards him, a strange sight, since he hadn't come across anyone else during that time. He got ready to greet him, but just as he did so, the figure disappeared completely in front of him. "I don't believe in stuff like that," he had said afterwards. "Just in the Holy Ghost, yet there it was, plain for me to see." Pauly's Island is 35 minutes south of Myrtle Beach, and has been a beloved summer getaway for generations. It's also steeped in histories of slave rebellions, agricultural plantations, and eerie tales of phantoms. While Hurricane Florence was on its way to the eastern seaboard, a rumor mill of an old legend kicked up anew, and more people began talking about the Gray Man. For those living in Pauly's Island, this legend isn't just an urban myth used to frighten children into obeying their elders. It serves a more altruistic purpose, saving lives. One local student from Pauly's Island said, "I think everyone around here knows about the Gray Man legend. Every time a hurricane or a tropical storm forms near us, people start talking about him. He's not evil or anything like that, but when someone does claim to see him, it gives locals a heads up to batten the hatches." Whether you believe in spirits or not, if you ever see a ghostly figure while you're on vacation by the coast, it's probably smart to head inland. Some stories feature not a human spirit, but that of an animal or animals. In the case of our next tale, we turn to the nation's capital to meet a spectral beast who may seem quite cuddly at a distance, but one who also seems to be a little less than welcome at state dinners, quite possibly because its appearance is an omen of bad fortune soon to come. And so the story of DC, the U.S. Capitol Demon Cat. The Demon Cat's glowing eyes hovered close to the ground, illuminating a coal black patchwork of fur. Its sharp claws clinked against the floor with every step, as if it was marching in a straight line, driven by an unseen power. The unsmiling guard on the night shift knew there were no such things as monsters. Still, some of the prisoners had been acting strange that day, their eyes red and puffy from crying, so he couldn't help but be nervous. A black cat, large for a house cat, padded out into the hall from an open door and stopped in front of him. Then, in one leap, it seized him by the throat and vanished into midair. The guard had met the famous demon cat of Washington, D.C. The demon cat, sometimes lovingly known as D.C., of course, was said to be an oversized, menacing feline of uncertain breed that lurked in the shadows of Washington, D.C.'s prominent federal government buildings. According to legend, it would sporadically appear before unsuspecting people with a motive to frighten or to serve as an omen for impending disaster or tragedy. The demon cat first manifested itself in 1862 during the Civil War when the United States Capitol basement was used as a bakery to feed troops. A guard reportedly fired his weapon at the cat, but it seemingly vanished into thin air that same day. Ever since, the infamous apparition has been rumored to materialize in the Capitol building's basement, and is sometimes described as a tabby or a black cat. However, according to an 1898 article in the Washington Post, its size quickly transformed from that of a regular house cat to that of an elephant in front of terrorized witnesses. In a 1935 account published in the Post, one observer remarked that the ghostly feline's eyes glowed with all the hue and ferocity of headlights from a fire engine. There have long been cats kept in the U.S. Capitol building for practical reasons. They serve as cost-free and efficient exterminators of numerous mice and vermin. Former Congressman John Dingell lent support to this detail and recalled that hunting rats that were as big as house cats was a primary function of these animals. Like many ghost stories, variations of the demon cat story get shared over time, but one of the most unique aspects is that of the feline specter appearing at more than one location. Both the Capitol building and the White House feature sightings of this mysterious cat. According to legend, when the demon cat appears on the ground floor of the White House, previously considered to be its basement, it signals impending doom or disaster. It's said that a White House guard witnessed its luminescent form just before the stock market crashed in 1929. And another night watchman spotted it prior to John F. Kennedy's assassination in 1963. Now, none of these claims has been confirmed, but many sources list the demon cat as one of the most famous ghosts said to haunt 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Steve Livingood, the public historian of the United States Capitol Historical Society, believes that the idea of a demon cat was born from an inebriated guard, who, upon waking, found himself face to face with one of the giant rodent-hunting cats. The story would have likely been told and retold by the guard, who may have used it as an excuse to get a day off of work. Furthermore, graveyard shift workers could have traded stories about what they witnessed while on duty in the dark and eerie underground tunnels beneath the Capitol. This myth, of course, could have some basis in folklore, as cats are seen as powerful animals in many cultures associated with bad omens that can appear during nighttime hours. The U.S. Capitol and White House are well known for being haunted buildings, and this legend is perfect for these two places since it brings together facts, creative stories, and superstitions. Still, if you find yourself in Washington and happen to see a stray wandering the Capitol after dark, perhaps just give it a little bit of extra space. If you've ever read or seen a version of the Sherlock Holmes story, The Hound of the Baskervilles, you know that black dog phantoms are considered signs of ill fortune. Not that we should let that stop us from loving these particularly adorable pooches. But in stories, these grim spectral hounds are often a warning of some dire consequences soon to come. We take a trip across the pond now for our final tale to hear about the black dog of Kids Grove. The people of Kids Grove, United Kingdom, have reported sightings of a mysterious black dog for decades. It is said that the Audley family, who owned much of the land in the area in the past, had trained a pack of dogs to keep poachers away from their deer. Unfortunately, it's believed that the lead dog of this pack ended up falling into a deep pit and suffering a death. This could explain why sightings of the phantom black dog have been more frequent over the last century, but gradually decreased and faded over the past 50 to 60 years. Over time, hauntings like this do sometimes disappear completely. The dog's primary sighting spanned from 1860 to 1900, a time in which multiple mining accidents happened near the area. Superstitious miners deemed the sightings of the hound a bad omen, and were hesitant to return to work for fear of further calamity. The ghostly canine was mostly seen around Lower Ash Farm, known now as Woodshed's Farm, adjacent to the canal. The farm is surrounded by areas of scrubland, the same land where people have reportedly seen this mysterious animal over the years. Unfortunately, those areas are now besieged by encroaching housing developments. In 1866, Mr. McGowan, the manager of Harecastle Colliery, encountered the beast on a walk with another person. The creature ran past him at such speed they had to jump out of the way. Mr. McGowan's position as manager of the mine may explain why he experienced this event. Another sighting occurred at Mop Cow, some miles away from Kidsgrove. An ex-police constable heard it coming and saw an enormous black dog with red eyes rush past him into a churchyard. He rushed over to follow it, but found the steel gate leading to the churchyard locked, indicating that the animal had gone through it without actually opening it. The dog was again seen in 1945 when a nurse named Ringley met the dog while doing her rounds. She heard what she thought was a farm animal behind her, but when she turned around, she found a large, intimidating black dog about the size of a Great Dane. She froze, waiting to see what the creature would do, only for it to turn and walk through the hedge at the side of the road. She looked on the other side of the hedge for it, but there was no sign of it to be found. The Kidsgrove black dog bears much in common with other black hounds like Black Shook, and you can read about a variety of black dogs in the United Kingdom in Mark Norman's book, Black Dog Folklore. And if you happen to be wandering around the moors at night, maybe keep a dog biscuit on you, just in case. That will do it for our tales of spectral warning and haunted handwriting on the wall, so to speak. Thank you so much for joining us again this year, and we highly encourage you to seek out your own local legends from bookshops and libraries to see if you might have your own tales of terror lingering in your backyard. The stories for this episode were gleaned and adapted from the Carolina Coastal Observer newspaper, Yahoo Lifestyles Reporting, the White House Historical Society, Atlas Obscura, Black Dog Folklore by Mark Norman, and the ABC CLIO series American Myths, Legends, and Tall Tales, an Encyclopedia of American Folklore. If you'd like to share your own local legends or contact us, please do so at compassandkey@gmail.com or newworldwitcherypodcast@gmail.com. Both will reach us. You can find dozens of other stories, at this point probably, closer to 100 other All Hallows Read stories, available at our website, newworldwitchery.com, in our podcasts section. We do these every October. You can also find over 200 articles on North American folk magic there, as well as over 200 episodes of our podcast, New World Witchery, featuring interviews with North American folk magic practitioners and authors, as well as conversations, discussions about North American folklore, witchcraft, and magic. You can also find all of our social media accounts and links by going to newworldwitchery.com/find-us, where we keep an up-to-date list of our contact locations, upcoming events, and all sorts of other things as well. So, and if you enjoy this episode or others, please feel free to help support the show. We do appreciate it immensely. It does help us to do all kinds of things and keep the show going. You can support us for $1 a month, whatever you can afford, at patreon.com/newworldwitchery. Thank you so much for listening. We hope that you're having a wonderful spooky season. Happy Hallows, and frightful reading to you all, and be well.